Okay, a couple of Rashi's. I'm still working through most of the new Rashi's. It's like my seventh year doing this, so we're getting to the harder Rashi's of my Yishlach. So a couple of Rashi's I'm still thinking about. So I wanted to take a look this year at that section in between the story of Shechem and the end of the Parsha of Esau's family. That whole strange section where they're making their way to Beit El, and Devorah dies, and Yitzchak dies. We don't see Rivka. So let's start with Devorah. And of course, Binyamin is born. Vatamas Devorah menekes Rivka. Vatikaver mitachas lebeis El tachas ha'alon. Vaygreshmo alon bachus. So they come to Beit El. And somehow it's important for us to know that a wet nurse, a menikah, of Rivka, whose name is Devorah, who we haven't met, dies. We don't know where she dies, but she's buried in Beit El, underneath a tree. Everyone's crying. It's called Alon Bachus. We live in Alon Shvut, the tree of return. This is Alon Bachus, the tree of crying. Very strange pasuk. We don't know who Devorah is beforehand. Now, this is the first Devorah of Tanakh. Why is her death important? Why is she buried in Beit El? What brought her to Beit El? So Rashi fills in the blanks. Ma inyan Devorah b'Beis Yaakov. I always wanted to be head of a Beis Yaakov school. If I ever rejected a girl named Devorah, I could quote this Rashi. Ma inyan Devorah b'Beis Yaakov. You know, not to my school. Good rejection letter. Okay. You want to be kind when you say no to people. I quote Rashi. Ma inyan Devorah b'Beis Yaakov. Why is Devorah in Beis Yaakov? Why is she there? Because Rivka had already told Yaakov in Parshas Toldos, go to Lavan for a little bit of time and I'll call you back. When I call you back, please come back. Okay, when it's safe. When it's safe to return. When Esau's anger is already subsided. So, because she promised Yaakov 20 years earlier that she was going to call him back, she now sends Devorah, okay, to Paddan Aram, and she dies on the road. Rashi says, I heard this from one of my Rebbeim, Rebbeinu Moshe HaDarshan. Heard it's the name of Rebbeinu Moshe HaDarshan. Now, first of all, the details aren't really clear. Did Devorah actually make it to Paddan Aram before Yaakov left? Or did Yaakov already leave and Devorah went to Paddan Aram and Yaakov had already left and she wasn't there? Then she has to catch up with the family. Rashi's unclear. Shalcha Devorah etzlo lepaddan aram letzeis mishamu mesa baderach. Does it mean that Rivka sent Devorah to Aram Naharayim and she made it there and she said, Yaakov, come back, and that's part of the reason Yaakov woke up, as it were, and came back, and then Devorah was traveling with the party and then she dies? Or Mesa Baderach, when she dies on the road, maybe Yaakov had already left. It's very unclear. There's a lot that's unclear in this Rashi. But why is Rashi telling us the story, and what does the story represent? It seems like a trivial story, right? Trivial stories aren't recorded. What they ate for dinner, which deer they killed to eat for their feast, which river they crossed, unless it's Nachal Yapo. So these trivial details aren't recorded. What I think you're seeing here is as follows. There's a gap between Yaakov and his parents. And it's a gap that's inevitable because he's been absent for 20 years. And stylistically, the gap is who should really be coming to take Yaakov? Rivka should be coming. And instead, Rivka doesn't ever meet up with Yaakov or doesn't even join this party to go retrieve Yaakov. And I can make the claim that practically, Rivka is too old. But if she's too old, her wet nurse is too young. So I don't think it's such a great age difference. Normally, a wet nurse is someone your age. And let's just say Rivka was too old when she had a child. Rivka was 3 years old, 3 plus 10. But Rivka was pretty young when she had a child, according to Chazal. She wasn't in her 60s. So presumably, this wet nurse was more or less her age. And a wet nurse younger than herself. So the big question is, why doesn't Rivka go to retrieve Yaakov? And the answer is, it's because there's a gap that's developed between Yaakov and his parents. And there's a tragedy here, almost an irony, that Rivka doesn't go, and the person she sends doesn't really meet up with Yaakov until she dies. And then, of course, Rashi fills in the blanks for us, that that day, also was the day they find the Rashi, I'm sorry. Bagada is Basar Sham Be'evil Sheni Shehugad Lo'al Imo Shel Mesa. That day that Rivka dies, Yaakov finds out that Rivka also is dead. Does she die on the same day? Or at least Yaakov found out and experiences them together. which is why he makes such a large mourning ceremony when he calls the tree Alon Bachos, because he's not just crying for his nurse, he's crying for his mother. And Rivka's mother never really enters the parsha. You don't see Rivka's name. She dies anonymously, as far as the text is concerned. And Yaakov has to be told, by the way, oh, Devorah is dying. You're burying Devorah. You're giving Hefset for Devorah. By the way, your mother also died. And it should be reversed. Rivka should be the one who you're mourning primarily, not the war nurse. And this gap is inevitable because he's been distant from them. But I think there's a quiet critique of Yaakov. Yaakov spends time in Israel. And really, when he gets back to Israel, there should be two places he visits. His first stop should be Beit El, which is in the north, on his way back from Aram Naharaim. And his next stop should be Hebron, where his parents are. What is he doing in Shechem? Why is he buying land there? Why is he building malls and shopping centers and markets? Why is he getting embroiled in Shechem? So Chazal already are direct about the critique of Yaakov. That Hashem says, why are you tarrying? You should be going to Beit El. And Hashem has to give him the final push to get to Beit El. But in addition, he has his parents waiting for him. And his parents are alive. And Esav has already moved on to Seir, because Esav is not in the house anymore. Esav was on the road, right? Esav, after the encounter with Yishak, is on his way to Seir. So this is a free route for him to go home and be with his parents. And he doesn't. And he spends time, as we would say, building his own career, building his own walls and his own shopping centers. So he doesn't just delay going to Beit El, he delays going home to his parents until it's too late. And Rivka dies, and, at least textually, Yitzchak dies. Yitzchak dies in Parshas Vayeshev 12 years after Mechiras Yosef, probably Miketz. Yitzchak isn't dead in Parshas Vayishlach. But Yitzchak dies in Parshas Vayishlach textually, even though Yaakov makes it back to Hebron and they spend a little time, but you don't see any of their history together, and he basically dies right away. So both of Yaakov's parents die, quote-unquote, before he has a chance to spend any time with them. And the Torah is concealing that because the Torah doesn't want to highlight Yaakov's delay and how it caused this rift, not rift, but distance in the family. So the way the Torah describes that is, yeah, Devorah came to call Yaakov back from Aram Naharaim. Why doesn't Rivka get involved? Because Yaakov's no longer as, sadly, this is one of the sad outcomes of Yaakov having to run away. It's primarily not his fault. He spent 20 plus years away from his parents. Didn't have an opportunity to be with his parents and to build that relationship. So instead of Rivka being the one to retrieve Yaakov, Rivka sends Devorah. And Devorah dies, and everyone's mourning Devorah. And by the way, Rivka dies also. And Derech Agav, let's give a little hesped. At the end of the hesped for Devorah, after 2 hour hesped for Devorah, oh, by the way, my mother also died. She was a good person also. And then the hesped continues. And then Yitzchak dies before Yaakov has a chance to really spend time with them. So I think there's a storyline here. I'm still trying to process it, what the Torah's message is, but there's definitely a story of distance between Yaakov and his parents. And it's not his fault, primarily, but some of it seems to be because he delays in finally making it back to Rivka, or finally making it back to Yitzchak, who should be living. The way the Torah should describe Yitzchak is, Yaakov comes back, lives with Yitzchak, and Yitzchak is part of Vayeshev and Miketz. Yitzchak is written out of Vayeshev and Miketz, because for all intents and purposes, he's no longer part of Yaakov's life in Vayeshev and Miketz, even though they probably live together in Hebron. Okay, another very interesting description. When all the entourage meets Esav, so the Torah describes each meeting. So the Shvachos come, they present themselves to Esav. Remember, this is formal, ancient ceremony. You go over, you say hello, namaste, you bow down, and you say, and you present yourself, my name is Bilhah, these are my children, my name is Zilpah, these are my children. Then Leah comes, she's got a lot of children, 7 kids. Even if you don't count the twins. So Leah says, my name is Leah, these are my 6 boys, this is my daughter Dina. Of course, Dina was probably in a box. You see the box over there? See that box moving? My daughter over there. Okay? And then it's time for Rachel to present herself, and the Torah writes, V'achar nigash Yosef v'Rachel v'ishtachavu. Instead of the woman before the children, it's the child before the woman. Nigash Yosef v'Rachel v'ishtachavu. So Rashi comments, Nigash Yosef v'Rachel v'ishtachavu. All the women preceded their children. Yosef covered his mother. Yosef wanted to be before his mother because his mother was very pretty, and he did not want Esav to be tempted by his mother. So therefore, Yosef was zocha to the bracha of Leayin, that he, first of all, was very handsome himself, as we see in next week's parsha, but also that he was immunized against Leayin Hara Leayin, where people looked at him, or the girls looked at him. He's very pretty, very handsome. Now, let's talk a little bit about Rachel, a little bit less about Yosef. This starts a very interesting part of Rachel's legacy, where Rachel is covered and concealed and barriered from Esav. And in the Gemara Megillah and in Chazal, this is the reason that Rachel and her children, in particular Binyamin, are always seen as the protectors of Tznias. As I told my share yesterday, Tznias doesn't mean only how women dress. Tznias means you don't want to be the center of attention. You don't want people talking about you. You don't have to grandstand. You don't have to be exhibitionist. So, for example, when Shaul, the Gemara says in Megillah, when Shaul was appointed king and Shmuel said, go home and wait for me, so he goes home very quietly, and no one knows that he's the king. If I were appointed the first king of Israel, I go into the local bar and say, drinks on me, I'm the king. You know, the first king, I have free drinks, everyone. But put on my Instagram. Shaul gets very quiet, goes home, doesn't tell anyone. That's Tznias. You'll have to know about it. Ain Esther Magedes Moladata on Vesabia Kitsivil of Mordechai Asher Lo Tagid, the Gemara says. Part of it is because Mordechai didn't want to show she was Jewish. But according to the Gemara, at least in Megillah, Esther was very quiet. She didn't have to, and that's part of the correction of all the pornography and exhibitionism and voyeurism in Megillah's Esther, where everyone's just eating and drinking and slobbering and throwing up and orgying in public view. Esther comes and says, you know what? A little bit of tznius here, a little bit of dignity. A little bit of quiet. If you look at Megillah, leaving it to Purim, but in Megillah's Esther, where does the 180-day party take place? B'chatzar ginas b'sad ha'malach. Outside, publicly, you're walking by the palace, you're looking at people vomiting and eating and orging. It's disgusting. It's repulsive. Where does Esther's party take place? Beis ha'malchus. Inside, quietly, no one sees. Right? How do we know it's in the Beis ha'malchus? Because when the melech runs out to the chatzar, to the ginah, and Haman is caught red-handed trying to beg for an entire bav. So you see that the parties took place inside because Haman went, Achashverosh went outside to get a breath of fresh air. Then he came and he caught Haman, at least thought Haman was trying to make a pass at Rachel. Anyway, being that as it may, this is where the legacy starts. The legacy starts where Yosef wants to make sure that his mother isn't seen. It's not as if he's afraid that his mother's going to convince him this chas v'shalom. It just doesn't. She's a pretty woman. This isn't the place for people to be gawking and looking at her beauty. And Yosef covers his mother up. Now, Rav Besalovetchik used to say, that's why if you look at the Gemara says that though the Beis HaMikdash was built in the Chelek of Yehuda, Ritzua Yotzeis Michelek Olshel Binyamin, there was a little strip of land from Binyamin's portion, which is adjacent to Yehuda. And even though the Beis HaMikdash proper was in the Chelek of Yehuda, the Kodesh HaKadoshim was on that little piece of land that jutted out from Binyamin. So the Beis HaMikdash was built partially in Chelek Yehuda, but the Kodesh HaKadoshim was built in Chelek Olshel Binyamin. The Rav said, why? Because Kedusha always needs to be protected. Kedusha Tzricha Hachana. How do you protect Kedusha? Tznias. So Yehuda was not known for Tznias, not that he wasn't Senor, but it wasn't his forte. But the Shevet Binyamin was always known to be quiet and to protect their, as best they could, their dignity. So that's why the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Aron HaKodesh, had to be placed on the lands of Binyamin, that the land, the people, the Shevet, had this protective coating of Tznias, that when you don't look at people all the time, you can develop a higher level of Kedusha, right? Tznias is important on its own, but part of the problem with not being Tznoa is it's really hard to be Kadosh, because you're always looking at people's and thinking about how they're responding to you. If you always understand, one of the occupational hazards of being a Rebbe is you always know you're on display. So the goal is not to think about it, just to go about your business as quietly as you can. But those people who look to be on display and look to show people who they are, essentially you're playing to the crowd rather than looking for your own values, your own internal relationship with the Kodesh. It's hard to feel a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu when people are looking at you and you're doing it for public effect, you're doing it for public impact. But however, according to the Gemara Megillah, it didn't start in Parshas Vayishlach. Rachel's history of Tznias did not start in Parshas Vayishlach. It started in Parshas Vayeshev. What do you see in Parshas Vayeshev that Rachel was at Tznias? This is a very interesting, I'll just leave you with this because it's something to think about. I'll say that Rachel's Tznias was expressed by her giving the coats to Leah. Now, why would that be Tznias? Tznias would be not telling people you're the king. Tznias would be not telling people you're the queen. Tznias would be Yosef protecting his mother. But according to Chazal, the act of Rachel in delivering the coats to Leah was an act of Tznias, which probably means that at the core of Tznias, well, why should you be Tznoa? So there are two reasons you should be Tznoa. One reason you should be Tznoa is because you're always in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So if you're always standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, you don't want to express yourself too loudly. I felt this. When I was in the room with the Lichtenstein, I shriveled. I felt like I couldn't express myself. I couldn't project myself because I felt so awed by that presence. halachas kama v'kama elav alfei halafim. If when you're in the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and you feel his presence in the room, you're not going to express yourself and present yourself and celebrate yourself. But another reason for tznius is decentralization of self towards other people. Is you're not the center. You're not the only one. The world doesn't revolve around you. The sun doesn't shine on you. So tznius can be based in part on recognizing Hashem's presence in the room, in part that there are other people in the room, and therefore you're at tznuah. So Rachel's recognition of Leah, and she didn't want Leah to be mortified, Chazal tacked that on as an act of tznius. We would call that selflessness, and Chazal called it tznius. So Rachel's tznius begins already in Vayeshev. Yosef reinforces that tznius by protecting her from Esav's gaze, and then it becomes the legacy of Rachel and Sheva Binyamin. And the big question is, does it become Yosef's legacy? So that's the thing about in Vayeshev, where Yosef, maybe according to Chazal, is less tznuah at the beginning of Vayeshev, when he starts to get a little bit infatuated with his own looks, Yifei Tar, Yifei Mareh, and Chazal take him to task for it, and that's why Yosef Potiphera gets a little bit aggressive with him. And the question is, maybe this is Yosef's moment to learn tznius, and then to rejoin the ranks of Rachel and her children as the protectors and the forebearers of tznius. So that's fascinating to think about, whether Yosef was already tznuah in this week's parsha. So just two interesting Rashis. One Rashi about the whole story about Devara. Why is Devara coming? Why isn't Rivka coming? Who cares about Devara? Where does she die? Does she make it to Padan Aram? I think the quiet message of the Torah is that Yaakov and his parents are now disconnected. That's why it's not Rivka coming, it's Devara coming. And that's why Rivka's death is submerged within Devara's death, which is really ironic. Rivka is the only person in Sefer Bereishis whose death isn't described. Leah's death. That's not true. Leah's death isn't described. But Rivka's death, you'd expect to be described, and it's lost. It's lost in the shuffle. Yitzchak dies before Yaakov really reunites with him, even though historically, chronologically, Yitzchak only dies many, many, many years later. But that's not the story that Torah wants to tell. The story that Torah wants to tell is, Yaakov, why are you spending too much time? Why are you spending too much time with your own affairs in Shechem and your own fields in Shechem? First stop should be Beis Yael. Second stop should be Chevron. Okay, have a good day. Obviously, tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday, we shall share. Flying out tonight, and I'll be back next year, Monday, late morning. Okay? Yeah.